I'll just sing a song or something. Fill the airtime here.
Tell some ghost stories, okay?
Do a little dance for the YouTubes, the Facebooks. We had comments. Let's see. So I don't know if our commenters are still there. It doesn't look like it. We had a couple of people say, Happy Halloweens. People like to be scared. Blair Witch was awesome. So there you go. All right. So both our guests, my co-host left me. And I'm just here to fend for myself on this Friday afternoon. So here comes Patrick. He's trying to find the right angle on his phone. I guess I need to add him to the screen stream because he can't do that himself.
All right.
All right, Patrick, you are back. Oh, now you got a close up of the poster behind you. I kind of like that. And actually, your audio is actually better on the phone. So.
Oh, then even better.
Even better.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. Hey, it's kind of cool that we have this technology where we can just switch devices. And
yeah.
But you really ought to look into buying a plug for that laptop.
The weird thing, my computer in the like last week or two, like even when it's plugged in, it switches to battery power and then it just, oh, wow. I have to get it looked at. I'm going to get a external battery in the meantime, yeah. But
planned yeah. obsolescence, maybe it's time for it to go out. It's going to go out. Can't do anything about it.
Exactly.
So. Well, your break couldn't have come at a better time because I was getting bitter beer faced and I had to dump. I had to dump that thing.
That's, by the way, that's never happened on the show.
Like, never happened.
Always finish the beers. So wow. I think you might need to revise that rating down
yeah.
a couple points.
Jonathan, it will get, yeah, that, a one. Feels, it's yeah, a one. Feels, I'm going to revise that to one.
Good.
That's generous.
Yeah. Yeah, that should just be a... I don't know.
I think the $8 that I spent on it kind of influenced my decision to make, you know, if you spend more money on something, you try to justify your reasoning behind that. Yes,
absolutely.
And also justify to your wife why you spent that much money on a single beer.
Yeah. Well, it's luckily because we have this podcast, it's under office supplies.
But, that's right.
You know,
exactly.
So. All right, Patrick, where were we at before you were, your computer was so rude and cut you off?
So I think we were talking about the book proposal.
Yes.
So yeah, it's 3 pages, along with the elevator pitch about me and the book, and market analysis. I also just kind of put in, you know, how I would, a little bit about the marketing for it and what I planned for that. And then you kind of put a very high-level table of contents mm-hmm. together.
So that's. I'm wondering if the marketing part stood out because my guess is most authors don't include a lot of that. Did you find that like as a template? Did you just Google how to do a book proposal? Like, how did that come about?
So from working in publishing, I kind of just use the kind of the template that they used from memory and just put those parts in and had a friend look at it to see if there was anything that I might be missing. And we went from there.
And you know, you could sell that, right?
Yes.
You could start your own website selling book proposal templates
mm-hmm.
and reviews.
Kind of like in college when people sell writing term yeah. papers.
Yeah. And your high ticket offer is you can review people's book proposal for them at $250, $300, $500 a pop.
No doubt.
Easy.
Probably
easy.
More than that.
Mm-hmm. Probably more than that. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So that's cool. So first how did you research the publisher? Cause I mean,
so
you obviously had to sort to before you pitch to somebody. So how did you find that list and choose them?
So I kind of went through and I figured, every publishing company kind of has a niche of what, or kind of list of what they do. So I kind of had narrowed down 2 or 3 that I was going to pitch, or send a proposal to based on what they have published in the past. And a lot of that came from just Google and Amazon, you know, seeing, you know, if they had a book, like I know there's been a ton of books written about Lost. Mm-hmm. You know, so I checked to see who the publisher of that was.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, with Halloween, you know, who published those books and kind of went from there because I figured if they're doing these books, then they might be interested in this.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, yeah, that's just good research. I mean, that's, you know, copy and marketing 101 is you got to do your research to find out who your audience is, who it could be.
Exactly. All that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a friend that built an entire platform in the podcasting space where he started developing his audience. His first podcast was on talking about Lost, you know, the series. Like you were just saying, like, and just people would just like tune in to his podcast in droves, and then he would just funnel that, you know, that his audience to another, you know, platform that he would start on other topics. So,
and now that's, I mean, now that's a formula, right?
Yeah.
You had Lost, yeah. Now then you had Manifest, mm-hmm. and now you've got La Brea.
Mm-hmm.
And those are all exactly the same show.
Yep. Like just, pretty much.
I mean, they're pretty much the same show.
Yep.
I don't know how the, you know, this is why I asked about last week. I asked about the writer's room. It's like, I swear they're making this stuff up on the fly based on like social media comments.
Yeah, right.
And they're going to do the opposite of whatever the social media trend is.
Sure.
Just to keep people guessing. That's mm-hmm. my theory anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, isn't that what ended up happening with Lost? Like everyone had.
Don't know.
What it was. So they kept saying it.
You're breaking up a little bit.
Oh, can you, am I back now?
Yep. Yeah. Repeat that again. Cause I want to hear that. And you broke out like the most important part.
Wasn't that the thing with Lost where everyone kind of guessed and was like on the message board saying that they were in some kind of purgatory and the writers kept saying, no, we have it all planned out. We know it, and it's not purgatory. And then the last episode came and they were all in purgatory.
Yeah.
I never really watched Lost after the first two episodes.
Yeah. That's what I find with these kind of shows is I get really interested in like the first three quarters of the season. And then it's like the twists are so bizarre
mm-hmm.
that I'm like, I'm out.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, okay.
Yeah.
I see what you're doing. You're going to drag this on for 3 or 4 years. However long
the
ratings last. And as soon as the ratings dip, you're going to resolve it.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, it's never going to resolve.
Sure.
Which I think is a good lesson about marketing too. I mean, obviously Lost was a hit show.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if you don't pay off people's expectations at some point, they start to check out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You got to pay off those expectations at least a little bit along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why a lot of shows, you know, people get angry when it's like you get one answer, but then it gives you like 7 more questions.
Yeah,
like you need to give them enough so that they're not just constantly scratching their heads.
Yeah. And there's always a core base, you know, that's going to keep watching, you know, with whether it's soap operas, these type of TV drama, TV mysteries or whatever classification they are, you know, Game of Thrones, anything. Like there's always going to be a base that keeps watching, but yeah, I think you have to be careful. There's a fine line between keeping people guessing and pissing them off.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to keep that in mind when you're, you know, cause it's all marketing, right? It's all, cause you're not putting the show out for fun. You're putting it out to attract viewers and attract eyeballs so that you can sell advertising.
Yeah.
Have you seen this new series on Netflix called, what is it? Squid Game? Patrick, there's been a lot of buzz about that.
I've seen the first episode. I haven't gotten to see more of it.
Have you seen it, Sean?
I've heard about it, but I have not seen it.
Okay.
I'm more of a Ted Lasso guy than a Squid Game guy.
Yeah.
Just
me too.
Yeah, they're so similar. I'm not sure why I'm not attracted to both, but yeah. No, but I mean, I did read up because I was like, what is this Squid Game everybody's talking about? So I went and just did like a couple searches on it. And it's what is it? Korean culture, like kids games from the Korean culture. And
like, it's like Red Light, Green Light?
Yeah. Well, kid games that we played, mm-hmm. swinging statues. Mm-hmm. Like if I think about like what we did in the 80s or maybe even 70s, since we're old, Patrick, you're hanging out with two old guys.
I'm probably not
oldish.
Don't worry.
Oldish.
Oldish. New middle age. Yeah, but I mean, you think about those playground games that you used to play. Yeah. You know, that's mm-hmm. the kind of stuff is, but with higher stakes, which is, you know, that's what's cool about a good idea. And I remember one of my early copy chiefs, he did a talk on this. You know, he said, all you have to do is combine two ideas to create a new idea.
Yeah.
So the example I remember him giving in a speech was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, right?
Mm. Yep.
Everybody likes turtles. They're cute. You know, there's teenagers, skate punks,
right.
And then you combine turtles and skate punks and like into a crime fighter. So that's like three things in one.
Sure.
You know, but a lot of these shows are, you know, it's children's games, but with a death mm-hmm. consequence instead of just like you sit out and sit on the sidelines, right? You're like really out, you know? So it's just that little twist is all you need to make a new idea and obviously a hit out of some stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So, what do you think it was going back to Scream? What do you think it was about Scream in particular that made it such a hit in the time that it came out?
Well, I think it's similar to what you just said. It took when it came out, I mean, horror was not thriving at all. You had movies that just weren't coming out. It was a lot of the Michael Myers and Jason. They had killed all of them off. And so when Scream came out, it took the formula of that and adding the humor to it and adding more of a mystery to it, that it was still something that people knew. Mm-hmm. But it offered a fresh take and, you know, again, the characters that people could relate to and have that humor to them. So I think that's really what people took to it, because it felt fresh at that point. And it was something that was still the comfort food that we knew enough mm-hmm. as horror fans, but it was also had a fresh enough take. One of the people I interview in the book, they described it as, you know, a John Hughes movie meets a Wes Craven horror movie in a blender.
Yeah.
Right. And that makes sense, right? Because it was summer camp, right? Which I think was a big part of like the familiarity that we talked about earlier. That's a great, mm-hmm. that's a great compared like a John Hughes movie, because he, you know, that was so 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. Those coming of age things. So what better place for like a semi coming of age than a summer camp, you know, a lake type setting. And I mean, had that been done before, that type of setting for a horror film or not?
At a camp for Friday the 13th. I think that might've been the first one. Mm-hmm. I mean, Scream was just set in a small town in California. So it was, you know, I mean, the last like half hour, 45 minutes of the movie is at one of their houses. But it wasn't super new in terms of the setting. I would say if anything, it might've been new that much of the movie took place in one location.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
I think here's another element that I want to add on the screen that's a little different was there's an element of mystery, because you don't know, like, unlike some of the other horror genres, you knew who, you kind of got the background on who Jason Voorhees was, who Michael Myers was. But in this type of movie, you didn't know who was this. So you're trying to kind of figure out. So I remember, you know, through the movie, you're trying to decide, okay, who is the killer here? And, you know, ultimately you're trying to, you know, that adds an element of enticement for the audience, because they're trying to like, that keeps them engaged. They want to know who this is, who ultimately this killer is.
And leaning into the marketing of the movie, they use that mystery to market it as mm-hmm. a thriller rather than a horror movie.
Right.
Because again, the horror genre wasn't, you know, the liveliest at that point. So they said the new thriller from Wes Craven on a lot of the marketing material. to bring people into it. Right. And they also, something that seemed, you know, a crazy idea, they released it the weekend before Christmas. Because, mm-hmm. you know, that's, even the filmmakers, they were like, why are we doing this? It's not when people go to watch.
Right.
Slaughtered.
Yeah. Right before Deck the Halls, right? I mean.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. I'm wondering, I'm looking back over this list of the top 50. That's interesting that it wasn't really billed as a horror movie. And I'm kind of scrolling through these and I'm wondering how many of these mm-hmm. top 50 weren't actually billed as horror films. They were actually feel kind of like, I don't think of Quiet Place being marketed as a horror movie. It was more of a,
yeah.
It was more thriller. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, a lot of these I'm looking through, you know, even Psycho, Get Out was more of a mystery kind of trailer approach to it.
Like we were saying about Aliens.
Yeah.
Sci-fi. We consider it sci-fi.
Yeah.
Right. So I wonder if there's a clue there about, you know, kind of maybe it's taking people by surprise. You know, they think they're coming for this and they end up getting this. And then that kind of makes it the word of mouth spread because it's a little outside the category they were expecting. So it's worth talking about at the next cocktail party or next time you talk to your friends or whatever. Right. Cause it's unexpected.
And that was actually the big thing with Scream was it stayed in theaters for 6 months because of that word of mouth. Mm-hmm. They were kind of marketing it, you know, this one way, and it opened in fourth place. It opened against Beavis and Butthead Do America and I think Flubber at the time. Flubber might have been the year after, I forget, but it opened at number four. It didn't open at number one, but the word of mouth took over, and so they went from opening night just the filmmakers sitting in the back of a theater thinking that they had missed the mark and the film was just going to kind of maybe fade away quickly to it going on to become the most successful slasher movie. I forget if it still is or if Halloween 2018 beat it, but it's one of the most successful, if not most successful slasher film mm-hmm. and one of the very few that has cross the $100 million mark.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah. Have you ever seen what's
that's
a movie?
Bad when you can't beat Beavis and Butthead at the theaters. Like that's like maybe on Netflix or I know there wasn't Netflix then, but like maybe in the privacy of your home you might choose Beavis and Butthead over Scream, but like when you have to go up to the counter and ask for the ticket. I mean
okay, yeah, well, I mean, it was popular at the time, that show.
It was
huge, huge.
And I feel like that Beavis and Butthead had one weekend and then.
Yeah, that was like, it.
I'm not going back to ask for that movie.
Yeah.
What are some, I'm just curious, what are some iconic, you know, horror movies that have stood the test of time that weren't popular at the box office, but yet are kind of, cause I think about my kids are in their teens now. They were not around when, you know, The Thing, I don't know if you remember that movie, not the second one, but the original one came out like in the early 80s. And they're literally talking about that movie. And I had never seen it. So I actually watched it with them. But they were like talking about how great that movie was in terms of special effects and all this stuff. And it was, you know, I don't know how well it did at the box office. My thinking is it didn't do super well at the box office, but it's been one of those iconic, you know, horror movies that they've, people have latched on to over time. Yeah, there it is. What was that?
Oh, number four.
Number four.
Oh, yeah. Wow. It's not a horror movie, but I think one of the best examples of that, Jonathan, would be Hocus Pocus. Mm-hmm. It came out in the 90s and bombed at the theaters.
Yeah.
And now it's more popular now and is on constantly. And
yeah,
with, you know, I'm a millennial. So like everyone in my generation, you know, they quote it and send memes about it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like it's, if you're a millennial, they basically hand you a copy of it at birth. It's not a horror movie, but I think that's one that definitely, I think the other thing with the horror genre is it's so segmented and people, you know, there's the people that like the Saw movies and the really brutal ones like that. You have the people who like more of the supernatural, like Paranormal Activity. You have the slasher people. So I think that's the other thing with horror is it's so, there's so many different pockets.
Oh, sure.
That some of them may not do as well at the box office, but then they'll, on video, they'll get discovered and get the second life to them. I know for years, the second Nightmare on Elm Street was kind of derided by fans as one of the worst in the series. And now it seems like it's kind of having a second life to it. So I don't know how that did at the box office, but I know that's one that initially people didn't like that it seems like now is being looked at a little bit better.
Sure.
And also, I mean, to go along with that, when the last Scream movie came out in 2011, it actually didn't do that well at the box office. It didn't make its budget back. But now it dealt a lot with, you know, wanting to be famous, you know, for being a victim and live streaming their high school experience. So in 2011, that was stuff that wasn't really being done.
Yeah.
Whereas now, like, you didn't know what an influencer was back in 2011. So it's a movie that was actually ahead of its time. So now people are reevaluating it. Mm-hmm. And it's also kind of getting a new life on it because people are like, wait a second, this was actually talking more about what we're going through now.
Right.
Than it was then. So that's another example.
I think I'm surprised Natural Born Killers, I know it's not a horror genre, but I'm surprised that has not made a comeback with social media.
Oh, yeah.
It was so ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could see that happening today. Any other time.
Absolutely. Like,
and the fact that it hasn't come back around is mind-boggling to me. I don't know if there's something with the, since it's an Oliver Stone film, I think it was Oliver Stone, right? Like, if there's like some rights issues that he's just not going to.
I thought it was Quentin Tarantino.
Is it Quentin? One of those two.
Quentin wrote it, but Stone
directed it. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So between those two, they're probably fighting over something. Who knows?
Yeah.
But, you know, like that to me is like, I think about that and I was like, man, why? How come millennials haven't caught on to that movie? Mm-hmm. Like, that seems like that was just one of those movies. Even when I saw it, I was like, I could see that happen. But now I can really
definitely see it happen. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And also, can we talk about how Woody Harrelson went from being in Natural Born Killers to the guy in Hunger Games and Venom? Like, I think he's making the movie stay away because he's like, no, I'm on this train now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's been in so much stuff. I mean, he plays such a variety of characters. They're all kind of the same, but they're all different. Like, he's got the same quirks, but it's always a different character. You know?
Yeah.
Whereas Tom Cruise is always the same character.
Yeah, pretty much.
Woody Harrelson's a different character. Yeah. You know, those guys are the same character, same mannerisms, everything. Woody Harrelson has the same mannerisms, but very different characters throughout.
I haven't seen him in Venom yet, the second one, the Carnage. Is it? Have you seen it?
It's fun. If you like the first one, you'll like it.
Okay.
Well, you know they have good humor in all those movies, so that's what makes those movies really
work. Did you ever? I know we're hitting our time limit, but I want to mention: were you ever an X-Files fan? Because you're about that.
I feel like I was like just under that.
You're on the tail end, right?
Yeah, I think I was just a little under. Like, I had some friends that were, but I just never really got into it that much.
Yeah. Well, the reason I ask is because I always remember like X-Files had a unique mix of their episodes, like I think it spanned 10 seasons or something like that, but they always mixed it up between, they didn't just stay on the whole alien thing for constantly. Every now and then they would mix in a standalone monster episode. Like it would just be like its own standalone. It didn't have anything to do with like the whole, you know, direction that the, you know, the overall direction of the series, but they would throw these paranormal monster episodes in from time to time that were like just standalone, you know, episodes. And to me, those were the best ones. I didn't really care for the whole alien, you know, storyline that they were building on. I loved those standalone episodes where they were like some monster or some, you know, creature or something like that. That was like pretty, you know, it was kind of a thriller type episode that they would create.
I think it's interesting you say that because, you know, obviously it had staying power.
Like yep.
X-Files did.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, there wasn't as much competition.
That's right.
Netflix and some other things, but there was enough uniqueness in each episode that it could stand alone on an episode compared to like a Lost or Manifest La Brea, where it's very serial. Like you have to keep watching.
Exactly.
Whereas X-Files could stand alone for different episodes.
Yep.
Maybe they need to bring some of that back into the writing of these newer shows to keep, if they want longevity. If they don't, then keep doing what they're doing.
Right.
And similar to X-Files, you know, and I didn't watch this regularly either, but Buffy the Vampire Slayer did kind of the same thing, where it had like this giant myth and everything. But I do remember one episode from it where they did a silent episode. It was a standalone. It didn't really play into the overarching one. But it's also one of the scariest episodes of TV that I've seen because like it's just because it's so different.
Sure.
And everything that it's kind of along those lines of what you were saying with X-Files.
Yeah, I think that's another good marketing lesson, right? You have your overarching thing that your company, your business, whatever does. And then you have these little mini episodes inside that keep things interesting.
Mix it up.
In your marketing, mix it up. But you still have your overarching themes that and your overarching characters. But then you can have some other characters come and go throughout your marketing. And that keeps people interested but not bored.
Like in my marketing plan, I like to have my overall campaign and then the one-off little promos that I do.
exactly
My boss would love me so much.
So Patrick, this has been really good. I mean, I think it may sound like we were just kind of geeking out on movies and horror films, but there's a lot of good lessons in here if you go back and listen to this episode. About, you know, how you can apply some of these, you know, escapism, mechanism, catchphrases, relatability, formulas, characters, all this stuff to your marketing and have a little fun with your marketing as well. I think this can be a very, very valuable episode. So, Patrick, we certainly appreciate having you on. How can people find out more about you? Obviously, the book is available on Amazon. Anything else you want to say about where and how or anything like that?
Yeah, the book is available from Bear Manor Media. It's available anywhere. I kind of geeked out the other day because I saw my name on Target's website, which was very exciting for me.
Awesome.
Because how often do you see something like that? But and then on Instagram also, It Began With a Scream book. People can follow and I share a bunch of tidbits about the movies that they're fans, and I'm always chatting with people.
All right.
That's cool. So I love that. Any plans down the road to any offshoots of this book or any additional similar genres? I don't know. I mean, who knows? This thing could be turned into a chicken soup book, right?
Yeah, actually, I am working on a follow-up about the Final Destination books, Final Destination movies. So
cool.
That's what I'm doing now.
Awesome.
That's very cool. Yeah, you're on everything, man. Goodreads, 8 books. Like, you're all over the place, man. You're famous. Now you've been on this.
Yeah.
I mean,
if you can have, if your book's known well enough to have a book signing, you've done pretty well. So, I mean, that's that's awesome. Well, thanks for coming on. Thanks for joining us today, Patrick. It's been a pleasure. We enjoy talking shop, talking marketing, talking horror, man. That's it's all tied in. You know, Sean, I'm glad you mentioned the Herschel Gordon Lewis. I actually ordered that book, so can't wait to kind of read some of his stuff. That's a name that I've known about, but you just reminded me to tap back into
Patrick,
that.
Patrick, you might want to check him out because, you know, he's got kind of a cross. Definitely. He's into marketing and he's got these are all his films here. Like,
yeah,
he was into kind of like girly and nudie films early in his career.
Yeah.
And then he transitioned into slasher horror types.
Combined the two, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause here in 1972, the Gore Gore Girls Blood Feast, was I think one of his most popular ones. So yeah, you ought to check him out, Patrick. Cause I think his copy stuff is really, really good too. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a guy after your own heart.
I mean, what better way to market something than with girls and gore?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, right.
Blood and guts.
Yeah. Get since all the dawn of time. Systems going at the same time.
That's right. That's right.
Exactly.
Patrick, it's been a pleasure, man. We're going to, Sean and I, we're going to send you to the green room just for a second. We're going to wrap up the show and we'll come right back to you, kind of chat with you on the back end. But thanks again. Salute. Absolutely. Thanks. Salute. Good stuff.
Yeah, man, that was fun.
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed that topic. It's amazing. To me, you know, my marketing brain is going off, you know, what he's done. You know, I call it the riding the coattail effect. You know, you tap into something that's really popular in pop culture. You put your own spin on it and people
can. I think, who was it? Brendan Burchard mm-hmm. years ago. And when he talked about Experts Academy,
yep.
It's like, you don't have to be the expert. You can interview the experts. You don't have to create anything. You can just talk about what's already been created. You know, and he talked about you can be an expert by reading 2 or 3 books on a subject and you're an expert practically.
Right.
You know, because most people don't ever read one book.
That's right.
So you do a little research, find out what's popular, what hasn't been talked about, mm-hmm. like Patrick did. And that's pretty amazing. 25 years in and that movie has not really been talked about. So
I know.
That's some good research there, Patrick. Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Yep. Cool. Well, thank you all for listening. As always, you can find us over at persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on all of your podcast platforms. As Sean's showing, established, you know, our 3-year anniversary, 2018. Yes. A lot of good stuff. You know, I picked up a case, Sean, and I'm excited because I actually picked up today when I picked up the single, I picked up a 6-pack and a case of some others, so I'm set for the next 2 weeks on beverages. Nice. Nice. But one of them is from a series from one of our very first, is either our second or third episode that I had on, but it's a variety pack of what I had at that point. So it'll be interesting. I'm going to try it out next week. So
yeah, I'm curious now. So
yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's not that one. That's a good one. That's a good one.
Because we actually did whiskey early on because we had the...
I'll give you a tease. It's right. They're from they're up in Boston.
Okay.
And they're known... America runs on this. So I should... Okay.
America runs on... That sounds like a commercial, and I don't think it's the right one for what you're talking about, but... Dunkin', that's it. America runs on Dunkin'.
That's right. That's right. And if you recall, they have their own series around this time. So it should be good.
Forgot about that. Yeah, cool. Yeah. So you know, when you're 3 years in and 230 episodes, sometimes you're gonna have to have a repeat.
That's right. That's right. All right, guys. Well, thanks again for listening. I think I've already mentioned us, where you can find us, all of the platforms. So have a great week. We'll see you guys next week. Have a great Halloween weekend. Be safe. Take care.